Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me, as always, is Mr. Macaraccio. Matt, championship week is in the book. The playoff pairings have been set. What do you think?
I mean, it's really hard to think about it. I mean, first of all, you backtrack not more than 7 days ago. And if you would have said to me that Georgia and Alabama might have had a chance to get in, I'd be shocked if they did. To say that, though, having watched that game, I'm almost a little shocked somehow that Georgia was left out as well. I mean, I know you have to leave out the guy who lost to the guy, but you can easily make a case that Georgia was one of the top seeds in the country. So I applaud the committee on at least taking a little bit more of their own kind of rigor and protocols in mind by saying, you know, hey, you know, championship week matters. It is the tiebreaker. We value championships. I think putting in Oklahoma was good. Okay. But I think you could have easily have made a case for Georgia. I think you could have easily have made a case maybe about Ohio State. Overall, I think it's kind of exciting. I think Oklahoma fans should be excited as well. Notre Dame, I mean, this is your first time in the playoffs, so you're dancing, and you could argue that Notre Dame, more than any other team in the country, has as difficult of a road to the playoffs as anybody else because they have no championship. You know, they're an independent team, so they didn't really have that kind of that climactic finish that would have presented the drama and the story unfolding the way the other teams have. But good job, Notre Dame. You're in it. You're rolling. Clemson, obviously, we're going to see what you can do. I mean, listen, I thought Trevor Lawrence was a stud. I thought Trevor Lawrence could have even, I know crazy, might have even maybe worked his way into the Heisman voting this year. I know that's crazy as well. But when you look back on the year, he wasn't that far off from being as studly as we kind of proclaimed. And you could have made a case if it wasn't for the outstanding quarterback play around the country from a lot of players. He was right up there in the mix. So Clemson, awesome. And of course, Alabama, you know, fingers crossed for Tua Tagovailoa. You know, I'm just excited for him. I'm excited for Jalen Hurts. They are the poster children for sportsmanship and the way to do it right. And I'm just excited to see, you know, that team get back into it. Listen, it's like anything else, man. I mean, we hate to admit it, but college basketball is more fun when Duke's relevant, when North Carolina's relevant, when Kansas is relevant, when Kentucky's relevant. It's just more fun when the good teams are good. And having Alabama in the playoffs always makes it a fun ride. So I really, honestly, Paul, I'm really stoked for the championships.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think this was one of those times that, you know, if we had an 18 playoff, which I think eventually it's going to get there, it would have been nice to see Ohio State get in there. It would have been nice to see Georgia get in there. It would have been nice to see Central Florida in there. Yeah. And then I think the 18 would have been, you know, probably Michigan. And I think you would have had a very competitive, you know, 18 playoff, giving everybody a shot to be in there. I don't know why the logistics of it seem so difficult when there's, you know, lower level conferences that are doing that, you know, Division I AA or whatever it's called, you know, subdivision is doing the playoffs, Division II, Division III doing the playoffs. I hope one day we get there, because I do think it would be fun to see, you know, UCF get a shot, and, you know, Ohio State, maybe they hit their stride, you know, down the stretch of the season and what it could have been, and Georgia losing like they did with a heartbreaker. And yeah, they might be one of the four best teams in the country, but they're not taking a two lost team that lost in their conference championship like that over a, you know, a one loss championship team from one of the other Power Five conferences. It's just not going to happen, you know? So yeah, I understand they say it's supposed to be the four best teams, but it's also, you know, four best teams that are also most deserving. And then you got to try to situate them like that. So listen, we almost got Georgia with the upset, and then they would have been in, and then Alabama would have been the team that would have made it with one loss. And we would have seen, you know, Oklahoma not in there. And we were close to that happening. We really truly were, but I think it's going to be fun. I think we're, you know, we'll talk a little bit more later, but I think we're steamrolling to a championship game that we've seen in the past. And I think we might be seeing it again, but we have plenty of time to talk about that. We'll briefly touch about in the playoff, in the tail of the tape segment, and then obviously in the coming weeks, as well as we preview, you know, many of these bowl games in terms of a prospect perspective, in terms of what prospects we should have our eye on. So let's get to the first segment tonight. And we're actually going to combine segment one and segment two for this week because there were so few games this past week. So we're going to do the NFL draft report for this week and the Devy Slant together, talk about some draft eligible prospects that he have either declared or stood out when we were watching these championship games this weekend, and then also hit upon some younger underclassmen to keep an eye on, either from these games or just some other names that, you know, maybe we haven't talked about and should be mentioned as people soon to start to get ready in their for their Devy drafts that are upcoming, you know, in the coming months. So right at the top, a couple announcements and declarations of players deciding to forego their final season of college football, enter the NFL draft. We have a running back and a wide receiver. I think both would be in people's top 10 easily at their position. One is Calvin Harmon from NC State. Calvin Harmon is a guy who right now sits atop my wide receiver rankings. I know Matt and I have talked about him at length, you know, but wherever you sit on him right now, I think he, you know, is comfortably in people's probably top five or top tens. There's a lot to like about him. I think he's, you know, could go somewhere in round one or early round two. I've compared his game to a Davante Adams or a Hakeem Nicks when he was in his prime. I don't think he's got elite athleticism, but I think he's got capable athleticism. I love his ball skills. I love how he wins at the catch point, adjusting in air, you know, body control, all that stuff. I'm a fan of Harmon's game. And then Justice Hill, the running back. I think in an age of at the NFL level where versatility, where, you know, difference makers, we're seeing Curtis Samuel emerge. We talked a little bit about him last week on the pod. I think Justice Hill has a place. He hasn't had the greatest, you know, final season here at college, but I think, you know, I think Bateman type prospect, maybe around four, round five guy, but an intriguing skill set who he's going to get drafted by a team, and they're going to have plans for him on how he can make an impact at the next level. So I think, you know, I think two intriguing skill players. I think you're talking about, you know, Harmon, and it's a guy who I think we're thinking round one, round two. I think Justice Hill is a round three, round four offensive chess piece that can make a difference at the next level. Matt, any quick thoughts on those two guys before we kind of go into some of the games and the prospects that stood out?
No, I'm a very big fan of Justice Hill. I think Justice Hill is not the producer or the type of running back that I think a lot of people would slot as a three down back. And I'm okay with that. But I also ask everybody to kind of look, you know, a little bit towards the Chicago area and tell me how a young man named Tariq Cohen's doing. And I would template a lot of his game after Tariq Cohen. And that's not to say that he is as elusive as Tariq is in the open field, but I think he's a very, very tough runner between the tackles. He's stronger than you think. He's a more powerful runner than you think. He has a wicked good stiff arm, and he's very elusive in the open field. He's fast in a straight line, and he has that capability, in my opinion, the skill level to go ahead and be an immediate component to an offense in the modern passing game that we're seeing this year. So I really like Justice Hill. I think he's going to be a player that's going to continue to rise throughout the pre-draft process. And I think people are going to see him being absolutely a Robin to another Batman in somebody else's backfield. For example, just to give you something to kind of think about, imagine pairing him, you know, with a runner in the backfield like a Leonard Fournette. Imagine that. So TJ Yeldon getting a little maybe long in the tooth, and you're looking for a competent runner who can be alongside but yet pick up the slack when Leonard Fournette isn't there. I think Justice Hill would make an incredible addition. And don't tell me about size, guys. Go look at Philip Lindsay, right? Do we need to have this discussion anymore? I mean, shouldn't we really be reevaluating all the anthropomorphic traits that we keep looking at? Sometimes guys are just built differently, but it doesn't say anything about their skill level.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Hill's a guy who squarely is going to intrigue NFL teams. You brought up Jacksonville. I mean, listen, I'm sure Patriots aren't going to move on from him, but if the Patriots were to move on at some point from James White in a year or two, you know, you put Justice Hill in that backfield with Sony Michel, you know, the different versatility and skill sets complementing each other. You know, because Sony Michel right now is not really used much in the pass game. They would probably look to have a different type of element, different type of dynamic player back there as well. And there's lots of teams around the NFL, you know, you can say that too. You know, maybe, you know, once Darius Geis gets going in Washington, if they move on from Chris Thompson, you can see Justice Hill as a nice player to pair with Darius Geis in the Redskins backfield and do a lot of different things with. So there's lots of landing spots across the NFL that I think Justice Hill would fit in, and I think he's a guy who can be a game changer, could be a little bit of a difference maker. You know, I don't really care too much that he had a kind of a down year here. I think his skill set is intriguing. It's going to intrigue NFL teams. It's going to intrigue offensive coordinators, and it's going to be fun to kind of watch him and see where he emerges. Before we get into the games, one other quarterback note I wanted to make. I watched a Mac championship on Friday night. Tyree Jackson out of Buffalo, he was in the scouting notebook from before the season started. He's 6'7", 245. He's a redshirt junior. I don't know if he's going to come out, but if he comes out, he's going to be one of those guys that we're talking about as an intriguing prospect on day three at the quarterback position with his skill set. He's got some mobility. He can move around for a man his size. He's got good arm talent. I like some components of his game. I think he's a name that we're going to hear a little bit about. He declares as a guy who intrigues NFL teams, you know, in that round four, round five mix. I think Jackson's a name to have on the back of your radar. You know, I think you're going to hear more about him if he ends up coming out as a guy who's a little bit of an intriguing and has some intriguing skills and tools to work with at the next level. So, Matt, let's take this into, and we're just going to kind of shoot around here to games. Let's start with the big one, the SEC championship game. I mean, so many different players. We talked about a lot of guys over the last 2 weeks that you've been back on air with me. So we don't have to go into every single player again. A couple things that stood out for me that you could either piggyback on or take it in a different direction. I'm very intrigued by Alabama's second running back right now, Josh Jacobs. He's a junior. I'm not sure if he's going to come out, but he looked like the most explosive player at times in that Alabama offense the other day. You know, eight carries, 83 yards, and two touchdowns. But he looks like an explosive change of pace type player. He's probably going to go back to school. I think next year could be him and Najee Harris. But, you know, he's a guy who I'm intrigued by what I saw from him. And I think he's got a place at the next level. I think he's got an NFL skill set, NFL caliber talent. And I was impressed with what I saw from him this past weekend. And then on the Georgia side, you know, DeAndre Swift, I've been waiting. Obviously, he's more an underclassman, so it's more of that Devy Slam, component, you know, kind of put into with the NFL draft report right here. DeAndre Swift, I love the fact that they really made him a focal point of the passing game as well. Six catches, 63 yards. I watch this guy's skill set, and I walk away thinking, this is the next Alvin Kamara type player at the NFL level. That's going to be a guy who's not going to carry the ball 20 or 22 times a game, but combined with his rush attempts, his receiving, his receptions, he's a guy that you know, 16 to 19 touches, 16 to 20 touches a game. He's going to be an explosive player. And I think it's going to be hard for me to think anybody is ahead of him in the next summer when I'm doing running back rankings for the following draft class. You know, those were the two guys that really stuck out. I know I'm going to, you know, leave Isaac Nauta for you. I walked away impressed with him in that game. Jake Fromm, you know, listen, Jake Fromm, I don't know if he's going to be quarterback in Georgia next year, but he is really good. And I think people are undervaluing him. I know you said last call on him last week, and I think you're right. I think he's a guy that could squarely be in the round one, round two mix for next year's draft class as well in 2020. But I mean, there are so many guys, Damian Harris, you know, Jerry Jeudy, you know, Irv Smith Jr. I've talked about these guys so much over the year here that I'm not going to go into all of them. Those are a couple of the things that stood out about me. Anything from those guys I mentioned or anybody else that you, that kind of popped when you were watching this game?
So, Paul, I'm going to go ahead and read something to you, and I want you to tell me which player I'm describing from that game. Okay. I'm going to read. This is something that we wrote. So this is written by us. Okay. Here we go. Okay. While he has a limited route tree in high school, he displays the ability to execute slant screens and posts and goes. On deep routes, he displays a third gear capable of separating down the field from DBs. He tracks the ball well over his shoulder and does not lose speed when catching the football. He has solid hands, good body control while adjusting to the football outside of his frame. He shines after the catch with good explosive strength and acceleration, displaying the capacity to start and stop quickly. He displays solid to good agility in the open field or as a runner out of the backfield as he utilizes his acceleration and speed to elude defenders and gain yards after the catch. Considered by many of his peers to be one of the most impressive players at the Army All-America game, this young man profiles as a slot receiver that can turn any short pass into 6 points. Who is that player?
Oh my God, you put me on the spot here. I don't know. I mean, clearly it's somebody from this Alabama-Georgia game, I'm assuming.
Well, let me just finish it. It says, he's the type of player you need to get the ball in space, whether it be a screen pass, jet sweeps, or short routes. He has the ability to create after the catch.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay. I'll give you a hint. Ready? He's a freshman.
Freshman.
He was a freshman in that game.
You have me stumped.
That's okay. It's okay because they got a lot of young players in those games. Jalen Waddle.
Yes, he was very impressive. Very impressive in that game. Another guy that could have been brought up there. I'm glad you brought him up. Listen, I think everything that you just read about him, I think it's spot on. I think it's spot on. Right now, that's the kind of the skill set you see from him when he's out there as he continues to refine and harness his overall game. But he's just another guy, there's a litany of prospects in this game that are super impressive. And he's just one of them. I think that's spot on. Your eval of him, and I'm assuming that's from the freshman notebook last year.
Yeah, that was from our freshman notebook last year from him.
Yeah, I mean, that is a job well done by you in terms of your analysis when you watched him on his high school film, because I think that is who he is right now. And I think you hit that, you know, eval perfectly, because you watched that game and you think to yourself, man, here's another weapon for them, you know, another weapon in that offense, you know, that's going to make this offense move and it's going to be super impressive, you know. And any other guys, or if you want to elaborate more on him or any?
No. I mean, he was just interesting to me because he stood out. He's a guy that I'll get to when we talk our Devy slant a little bit. But I would say that Isaac Nauta, I think that you saw everything you needed to see. If you like Irv Smith, then you should love Isaac Nauta. If you like George Kittle, you should like Irv Smith, which means you should like Isaac Nauta. So if you have any type of feeling as a team that you want to get a player that you think is going to help you both in the run and pass game immediately out of college, then Isaac Nauta is that guy for you. He can make difficult catches. He can block at the point of the attack. He's stronger than you think. He can handle defensive ends on his own. These are the types of building blocks for being an every down tight end at the NFL level. And I think Isaac Nauta showed that in this game. And I think he reminded everybody why he was a player that was considered one of the top in his class coming out of high school.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's shown some signs down the stretch here of a guy who's really intriguing. I'm not sure he's going to come out, so I think we're going to be talking more about him next year as well. But I think we're starting to see, you know, Nauta, you know, really take the next step as he's being asked to do a little bit more in that offense. I think that's the thing that, you know, is so easy for people to forget that, you know, he was more part of their offense that freshman year. And then he kind of took a step back a little bit and wasn't really asked to do that much last year. And all of a sudden he kind of fell off people's radar, you know, like he couldn't, like everything we thought about him that, you know, freshman season went out the window. And it was more of a product of just what they were asking him to do. So I don't know if he's going to come out early. He might not be a guy that has a high enough grade to be like a, you know, a top 100 pick right now because they're looking for those difference makers, maybe at the tight end position. But like you're saying, a two-way tight end, you know, those are still very intriguing at the next level. They've just kind of been pushed a little bit more to like day three, you know, but so he might decide, you know what, I'm going to go back to school another year. Maybe, you know, maybe next year, maybe I finish out, get my degree, and then I come out next year, or maybe he changes his mind. So it's something that, you know, maybe rides a little bit of momentum he's had in the second half of the year here to, you know, put his name in the hat and see what happens.
And Paul, just before you transition to the next game, a couple of other names that just quickly stood out. Obviously, Riley Ridley proved that he belongs. Not only does he belong, but he excelled. And also, I would also point out specifically, this is a gentleman that we talked about way long ago in a galaxy far, far away. Jeremiah Holloman, guys, is more than just a random receiver. He is an absolute athletic freak that had to learn the position. He's learning the position, and he's showing that he can play at that level. And there's no doubt, everything I've ever read about him was always commenting his work ethic. A hardworking, athletically gifted wide receiver that is now developing the skill necessary to play at the next level. He should be somebody that you keep your eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. Came away impressed with him as well. Let's take this to the Big 12 championship where we saw, you know, Oklahoma defeat Texas, you know, to get that fourth playoff seed. You mentioned him last week. Sam Ellinger, you know, jumped off the page a little bit me this week. Now, I know Oklahoma has no defense, but it was more than that. Ellinger is a guy who's shown growth and development this year that I'm intrigued to watch his film a little bit closer, you know, next summer as he emerges to be a draft eligible prospect for next college football year. So Ellinger is a guy who I think has taken a step up this year in his growth and his development and has shown that he belongs a little bit and he warrants our attention a little bit. So I came away impressed with him. Colin Johnson, listen, he kind of is going to fall in that, you know, mid-range of wide receivers for me, somewhere in that like 13 to, you know, 12 to 15 range probably. But I'm intrigued by him. I watch him and I think he's got more athleticism than a guy like Arcega Whiteside or David Sills. I'm a little bit more intrigued with Colin Johnson that I could see him even maybe moving up a little bit more. Maybe right now he's in that 12 to 15 range in terms of draft eligible wide receiver prospects. But once we know who's coming and who's going, I could see him cracking the top 10 if he ends up coming out because I do like his skill set. On the other side, you know, we kind of buried the lead slightly. Marquise Brown suffered a foot injury. Not really sure the severity of it. I don't think we're going to see him in the playoffs. And it could be one of those injuries that lingers. And for a guy who has explosive speed, he's not going to work out in the pre-draft process if he can't display that speed. So I do wonder if we've seen the last of Marquise Brown until he's in it on an NFL roster and performing for an NFL team. I mean, it all depends on the severity of that injury, but if it's a serious thing, like a broken foot or anything like that, I haven't heard anything yet, probably because, you know, there's no game upcoming this week, you know, but if Brown is finished, A, it hurts Oklahoma, and two, it kind of is a little disappointing because he has been, you know, moving up draft boards in terms of the wide receiver rankings, and I don't think this is going to push him down at all. But it's going to be a little bit of a disappointment to not be able to see him work out because he's one of those guys that, you know, was going to put up a crazy time in the 40, you know, an electric player, you know, obviously left that game injured. So those are a couple things that stood out in the Big 12 championship. Also a couple underclassmen, you know, again, you know, in terms of that Devy Slant component, Trey Sermon, the running back out of Oklahoma, you know, intriguing guy. You mentioned him to me a while ago. Obviously, he's been filling in all year for Rodney Anderson. I think he's a guy who's going to be much more in terms of national discussion, you know, leading into next year and, you know, during the season. And then CeeDee Lamb, the wide receiver, 6 catches, 167 yards and a touchdown. You know, Oklahoma's all about, you know, reloading. They don't rebuild, they reload. And if Anderson goes on to the NFL, it'll be Sermon's job. CeeDee Lamb will be the guy that takes the, you know, the mantle from Marquise Brown as wide receiver one. Obviously, they're going to have to see what they do with the quarterback position, you know, if Kyler Murray goes on to his pro baseball career. But Kyler Murray, man, I'll say one thing. If he was going to play football in today's NFL with the way the game is changing, I think there might have been a place for him to play some quarterback at the next level. He throws a really pretty ball, and he moves around well and improvises well, throws on the run. You know, you close your eyes a little bit, you see some Russell Wilson in the things that Kyler Murray are doing in that, you know, spread attack there that they're running at Oklahoma. So I came away impressed with him, you know, and a lot of other guys in this game. I didn't even mention a handful of other guys I could have. Matt, any thoughts on the guys I mentioned or a couple other guys you want to bring up?
No, I mean, I think you hit on all the major guys, and I think that the big thing that I would kind of reiterate is I do think Trey Sermon is a guy to keep on your radar. Same with CeeDee Lamb. But I think when it comes down to Kyler Murray and you talk about what he is and who he is, you know, it goes back to the first game I ever saw Kyler Murray play was in 2015 when he was at Texas A&M. And he got the start, I think, at the time because, man, I forget who it was that was currently quarterbacking A&M, and they weren't available. And Kyler Murray stepped onto the field, and I remember that, you know, I was watching him play this entire game, and I said, my goodness, the thing that stood out to me about him, he might have been one of the best runners that I've ever seen at the quarterback position. Now, I know that sounds very bold, and I'm sure – you know, a lot of people would kind of disagree with me, but I'm even putting him up there in like all time kind of ability. I mean, here's what I actually wrote about him. You know, I actually said post-snap, he displays good speed, executing his reads decisively and distributing the ball quickly on all down, regardless of field position. He shows the capacity to go through two and three reads and deliver the football on time. Considering the magnitude of the stage, this was at the time, he looks good under pressure with the ability to extend the play within the pocket and climb to avoid pressure. Although his throwing mechanics are a little, I had a couple of issues with his throwing mechanics at the time. Really, it's his ability and his speed in the open field on rollout passes, read option passes, and things of that nature that make him absolutely potentially dominant. I said Texas A&M fans should be really excited for what he's going to bring once he gets the full-time starting job. That was in 2015.
Yeah, it took a while for him to fully hit that potential and ceiling. It took him leaving and going to Oklahoma and all
that. He had
to
find it. He had to find the opportunity.
Yeah, and he found the opportunity. And, you know, selfishly, I kind of wish he wasn't so good at baseball to warrant being taken in the first round, you know, as a pitcher for the Oakland A's, because I would have loved to see this kid play football some more.
I think your point, though, is that the NFL is ready for him. The NFL is now primed for players like him. If you can bring the skill set of the Russell Wilsons and all that, I think it's ripe for the taking. Quarterbacks of that nature now will have a shot and a role.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I think you're 100% accurate in that. You know, and it's unfortunate because it would have been fun to see him, you know, continue his football career. But again, we've talked about this. I mean, the money difference, the risk of injury, the guaranteed money, you know, it's all something that, you know, way too much for Kyler Murray to pass up, you know, with how good of a baseball player he is, you know, and I think I said pitcher, outfielder, he's just an electric baseball player. I mean, to warrant going when there's like, what, 70 rounds or more in the baseball draft to be taken as high as he was speaks volumes on his overall talent and skill level at that sport as well. So Matt, I'm going to give the floor here to you, and I'm going to preface it by, let's combine the Pac-12 championship there with Utah, Washington, and the ACC championship with Clemson and Pitt. any prospects stand out in either of those games? Obviously, you can take it the Clemson route. A bunch of guys there we've talked a lot about. If there's anything else you want to kind of share thoughts on those guys, if there's anybody that stood out in the Washington or from Utah, anybody on those teams that warrant, you know, discussion here, you know, that you found intriguing this week?
Well, I think it's a lot of the usual suspects. So I don't want to go and reiterate guys that we'll probably talk about more so as we kind of unfold this championship picture. But I think it's pretty much going to be the usual suspects from the Clemson game, talking about Trevor Lawrence's and Travis Etienne's and the T. Higgins of the world and what those guys can bring to the table. You know, I would say I'd be remiss if I went too crazy with those teams. Is there guys that stood out to you? Because I felt like it was still a list of usual suspects.
Yeah, I don't think there was anything that really stood out. I think the thoughts that I had about these players were what I saw this weekend. In the Pac-12 championship game, listen, Jake Browning has had a great collegiate career. He's great.
Outstanding.
He's had a great collegiate career. You could say the same thing about a guy like Trace McSorley. You know, legendary collegiate careers at their thing. The wins, the stats that these guys have put up. I just don't see Jake Browning, though, as a guy who's going to be an NFL, you know, quality quarterback. Could he make a team as, you know, practice squad, third string? Sure. Could he maybe develop into a backup, you know, at some point down the line? It's possible, but I just don't see an NFL skill set in terms of his arm talent, his accuracy, you know, his decision making. And that's what I saw in this game. I mean, it was a very, you know, very low scoring game, not a lot of action. I mean, it would have been fun to see Utah's running back, you know, Zach Moss in this game, who, if he comes out early as a junior, you know, was getting a lot of buzz prior to his injury as a potential day two pick, you know, in the top five running back mix on some people's boards who are really, you know, good at their jobs, like Dane Brugler and stuff. So it would have been fun to watch him in this game. On the other side, Miles Gaskin. Listen, I feel like Miles Gaskin has been in college forever. I feel like
forever.
We've seen Miles Gaskin, you know, for years and years, and he is who he is. He reminds me of Amir Abdullah. He's got good lateral quickness. He can make people miss. He's on the smaller side, but he runs hard. He'll put his head down in between the tackles. He's not going to break many tackles at the next level. He doesn't break many tackles at the collegiate level. He's a better in space player, more dangerous on the perimeter. You know, this game didn't have a lot of big holes for him. I mean, 22 carries, 71 yards. I mean, that's what it was. Gaskin is a guy I'm surprised he didn't come out early last year. He went back to school. You know, listen, is it going to hurt him much in draft stock? I don't know. He's probably a day three guy. He's probably a round four, round five guy. I don't think he's a round one, round two guy. Maybe slim chance he slips into round three, but I think he's more of a day three type guy. Again, he's going to complement another team, you know, complement another runner in a backfield, maybe a part of a three-headed backfield. I think that's where Gaskin is probably headed at the next level. As a guy who, you know, is going to be a part of a committee, change of pace, do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but has some game breaking ability and has, you know, some quickness to make some big plays happen. And that's what I kind of thought of Gaskins. And then the other game, I've talked enough about Travis Etienne and T. Higgins, and we'll be talking about them, you know, throughout the next month and even a little bit later as we preview ahead, you know, our initial thoughts in terms of the tail of the tape, in terms of the playoff matchups. So with that said, let's transition to the final big game in a week past weekend. And that was the Big Ten championship with Ohio State and Northwestern. You know, listen, I've been evaluating the quarterbacks all year because I feel like the Giants are going to be in the mix for one, depending on how many come out. Do they get one this year? Do they not get one? I know you're on record as saying, wait. And it's possible that's what they end up doing if they don't see the right guy, right fit for their team. But I watched that game and I think to myself, if they're picking top 10 and Dwayne Haskins is there, I like him. I think he would fit well in New York. I think the ability to push the ball vertically down the field, his arm talent, he can play in the East, you know, up here in the East with the wind and the cold, you know, as the weather turns here in the NFL season. I think he's the guy who has a little bit of a persona, a little bit of a bravado about him. I think his personality would play well with the Giants, with a guy like Odell Beckham, you know, in that offense, in that huddle, the way he carries himself. You know, again, we're not in the inner workings. We don't see the leadership, you know, from day to day, but I see what I watch on the field and I try to look for things, you know, when they show him on the sideline or, you know, before a play or after a play. And Haskins is a guy who is he raw? For sure. Listen, he's very raw. But listen, Josh Allen was raw, and we'll talk a little bit about him later. And I don't think Dwayne Haskins is on the level of rawness, you know, that we saw from Josh Allen last year. I like his skill set. I think it's intriguing. I think it warrants a top 10 pick. And I'd be very ecstatic as a Giants fan if Haskins ended up there, because I do think he's going to come out as a redshirt sophomore. And I know the limited starts is a little bit of a concern. I get it. But I think he sees an opportunity here to be a top 5 or top 10 pick. I think he's gonna take it. You know, news today about Urban Meyer leaving. You know, obviously, you know, the offensive coordinator is gonna stay on there as the coach, so it's not a massive change there. So I don't think that'll push him one way or another to leave or stay. But I do think Haskins, the player, is a very talented prospect who's gonna be one of the top quarterbacks, if not the top quarterback prospect in this draft. And this game just continued to solidify that for me. On the flip side, Clayton Thorson, he was a name that was getting a little bit of buzz before the season started. I wasn't a big fan of him. Every time I watch his game, I still think late round pick at best. Like, I don't see second or third round type talent out of Clayton Thorson. I see day three, even more towards the latter part of day three, as a guy who, yeah, he has some of the measurables. He, you know, he checks those boxes, size, stature. But even for size and stature, I don't think he has, you know, this great arm talent. I think it's mediocre. I think it's above average, but, you know, I think that's all it is. I think his accuracy is inconsistent. I think his decision making is inconsistent. So he's not a guy who I think is a top 100 type prospect who was generating some of that buzz, you know, before the season started and early in the year. Any thoughts on either the quarterbacks or anybody else? You know, draft eligible guys, underclassmen, Ohio State always got, you know, a plethora of prospects to talk about.
No, you know what? Actually, I'm going to do something really nice because I think you really covered it quite well. I figured I might as well hit on some Devy guys that, if you are coming up, as Paul was saying, into that Devy picture and you're looking towards, you know, what might be out there to get, I think this season gave us a little bit to think about. And these are guys that I think you're going to hear kind of reiterated over and over again in the Devy community. And they've already been heralded, some more than others. But I think this is going to be your last opportunity to get these guys if they're still available. So the first one I want to mention is Rondale Moore. Rondale Moore from Purdue. He had an outstanding freshman season. Reminds me a lot of DJ Moore with a lot more skill in terms of his route running, in terms of what he can do after the catch, in terms of his hands, his ability to catch in traffic. He's actually quite similar, if you ask me, to another player who's probably last call, if you haven't gotten him already, Amon-Ra St. Brown from USC. He had a tremendous season as a freshman. I think those two young men are going to light the college football world on fire. And I think they're already showing that they are going to be in the same kind of ilk or vein as, if you think about the next level kind of prototypical style players, you're looking at those players that are going to be in that Steve Smith style of player. Those guys that bring that physicality, strength, as well as skill to the position. And I think they have a bright future ahead of them. Travis Etienne, I keep pounding the table. He's probably the last running back that is going to be, you know, of interest, I think, at the NFL level as being a, you know, three down workhorse, explosive back that it can kind of rival the DeAndre Swift / you know, Cam Akers of the world. I think Travis Etienne is that guy. You might want to go out and look at him. CeeDee Lamb, we talked about him earlier from Oklahoma. I think he's a tremendous wide receiver. I think he's very undervalued right now. Zamir White, he was injured. He was injured for Georgia this year. He didn't play, but look for Zamir White to overtake Holyfield coming up next year. He's a guy last call. He was a top running back. If you haven't seen him play, go watch his high school film. I promise you, you'll like it. Justin Ross is a player who had some big splash games this year for Clemson. Another young guy. Stay on top of him. He's a guy that I would not turn my head on. I would try to get him in the Devy draft. Justin Fields as well. Trevor Lawrence, they go without saying. Another guy to keep in mind. If Miles Sanders says goodbye college football, Ricky Slade is right there to take over. Don't forget about Ricky Slade. Ricky Slade is very much what Penn State loves. That dual-purpose back that can both run between the tackles and catch the football. With a full kind of year in that coveted PSU, Penn State University athletic training program, where they just keep turning out freaks upon freaks upon freaks. Ricky Slade has had a full year of that. Look for Ricky Slade to be available soon for next year. He's a guy I'm going after. Tariq Black. If somebody gave up on Tariq Black because he's been injured so many times at Michigan, tell them I'll take him, because I think Tariq Black is only beginning to scratch the surface, and with some healthy years, he could be fine. Also, our number two skillful player, I thought my number two skillful wide receiver in the actual college football world, is probably going to likely stay back at Louisville, and that's Des Fitzpatrick. If nobody owns Des Fitzpatrick, you might want to go and grab him because, listen, whatever you want to say about Louisville, they're kind of going through growing pains, whatever the case may be. Jalen Smith, yeah, he's the guy. Next year, it's Des Fitzpatrick's show. We're going to have an opportunity to evaluate him on a different level, but I would invest now. If I had a late-round Devy pick, people are not thinking about him, I'd go and stash him because I think he's an absolutely incredibly skillful route runner, and he can really bring a lot of good stuff. Also, Matt Corral. Matt Corral is likely going to be the heir apparent to Jordan Te'amu at Ole Miss, and I liken Matt Corral to Brett Favre. If you like Brett Favre, if you like that Patrick Mahomes-style player, then Matt Corral is a player that should intrigue you. Big arm, can throw a really pretty deep ball, okay? He's still working on, you know, maybe kind of throttling back some of that aggressiveness, but he's still a player that I'm keeping on my eyes easily, and he already showed up already in the last couple weeks and showed pretty well. A.J. Dillon might be still out there if he isn't already owned. And Joshua Jacobs, as Paul said earlier, if he goes back and somebody doesn't own Joshua Jacobs, go and get Joshua Jacobs because I agree with Paul. He's a guy that looks every bit the type of NFL running back, like I said earlier, that DeAndre Swift, that Cam Akers, that Travis Etienne, that Joshua Jacobs-style player that can run between the tackles and contribute in the passing game. Those guys are what NFL teams want. That's what they're looking for. Everybody wants a version of Alvin Kamara now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Jacobs is a guy who I could see teams looking at him and seeing Kenyon Drake. You know, I know the
same thing, right?
The same school is easy to make, but that's what I'm kind of seeing as I've been watching all these Alabama games this year. I see what Jacobs and what he's done for that team, and I think back to when they had Kenyon Drake in terms of not overly worked, not a guy who's going to get 15 or 20 touches or anything like that, but a guy who Alabama uses in spurts here and there and big play after big play. So let's take this over to the tail of the tape, and we're going to do a little bit different because there's no games really to take a look ahead this weekend except the Army-Navy game. You know, next week we'll start looking at the first, you know, slate or so of bowl games. So really just real quick, early impressions, anything in particular from – I'm gonna mention the six games, the New Year's Six. Obviously, the two playoff games are Alabama-Oklahoma, Clemson-Notre Dame. The Peach Bowl is Florida versus Michigan. The Fiesta Bowl is LSU versus UCF. The Rose Bowl is Washington versus Ohio State. And the Sugar Bowl is Texas versus Georgia. Couple things on my end that stand out. And obviously in the Alabama-Oklahoma game, the health of Tua. You know, the landscape changes a little bit if it was Jalen Hurts there. Because I don't know how Oklahoma's going to stop Alabama at all. Like, I think it's a game that if Tua's quarterbacking, you're going to see them potentially score 60 or 70 points if Oklahoma's able to score. And I think Kyler Murray and the Oklahoma offense is going to be able to score a little bit of points there. So how does Oklahoma's offense do against, you know, that Alabama defense? The loss of Marquise Brown could be big in that matchup. And then obviously the health of Tua is my early take on that. Clemson, Notre Dame, I have a hard time envisioning Notre Dame win this game. You know, I think it would be a great story. I think Ian Book has had a fantastic year, but against that Clemson D line, I have a hard time seeing, you know, Notre Dame being able to really stay close in that game against Clemson and pull off the upset. And then in the other four, you know, New Year's Six games, you mentioned Tariq Black before. I want to see Donovan Peoples-Jones and Shea Patterson go up against that tough Florida defense. I think that's something to really keep a, you know, close eye on. UCF, can they pull another upset against an SEC team in LSU? Last year, you know, it was Auburn. Can they do it, you know, against the Tigers? And then, listen, I know the Rose Bowl, it's one of the biggest stages of anybody to play college football. So I want to see how Dwayne Haskins handles that moment in what's possibly his final game in college football. How does he do? Washington's a solid team. They'll be up for that game. Ohio State might be a little down, a little disappointed that they're not playing in the playoff game, but it's still the Rose Bowl. You know, it's still a big moment, big spot. How does Dwayne Haskins look? And then that Sugar Bowl, Texas versus Georgia. You know, interesting game. Again, Georgia's going to be disappointed. They're playing in it. Tom Herman is great, you know, as an underdog. How do those, you know, Texas wide receivers and Ellinger, we talked before, how do they perform against that Georgia defense, you know, and can Georgia get their run game going and, you know, Ridley and their pass game going against that Texas defense as well? So those are just some really initial early takes for me on these games. We'll go way more into detail on it. Matt, anything, and you don't have to go through all six of them, is there any prospect or anything individual storyline that you're kind of looking forward to in terms of any of these New Year's Six games?
Yeah, I think I would bring it back to skill acquisition, something we talked a lot about over the summer. And I think a big dimension of these games, and you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about Dwayne Haskins, the psychology of these games is a really, really important component to the evaluation process. Not so much necessarily the level of competition at this time, because we can all agree that for the most part, these are relatively evenly matched teams. But I think the psychology of the moment, the bowl game, and what the bowl game does to a college football team in terms of really, in many ways, deciding whether it was a successful season or a poor season. Now, attached to that, that you might be leaving for the pro ranks, knowing that this is the last footage of film that you're going to lay down. Film don't lie, and this is the last time you're going to be able to lay down film. There's a lot of pressure on these guys. And a lot of these guys, I don't care what their level of ability is, whatever type of poise they may or may not have, consider that every player in the championship and the bowl games are literally trying to put forth their best tape possible, because the tape always outlasts the guy. And when they're ready, when they're sitting there and they're saying, do we draft him or not draft him? They're going to be loading up the tape where the time and the pressure was the biggest. You could say it's competition, and yes, that does go concurrently with big pressure games are usually against great competition, but don't neglect the fact that bowl games and being your last footage of film matters greatly in that evaluation process. It matters significantly to Dwayne Haskins. It matters to Jake Fromm. It's going to matter to Sam Ellinger. It's going to matter to Tua Tagovailoa. It's going to matter to Damian Harris. It's going to matter, name any position. It matters. And how those guys perform, it gives you some indication of the level of skill that they have, because those things do affect how a player performs on the field. They don't tune it out. They're humans just like us. How they handle it says something about their skill level. NFL teams and scouts will be watching.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was a great, you know, great point to make there in terms of, you know, not just thinking about it as an individual prospect, but just thinking of the moment and how that goes into the evaluation process, which we are constantly talking about here. So let's close out the day and close out the night with the NFL rookie report for week 13. We are in the home stretch of the NFL season as well. And like I've talked about on many episodes, this rookie class has really taken the NFL by storm in lots of different ways. Lots, you know, of high caliber prospects performing at a really great fantasy level this year, and sky the limit moving forward for some of these guys. Let's start the quarterback position where we usually start. You know, again, we keep coming back to the Josh Allen discussion because I think it's fascinating. And even right now, I think the narrative around Josh Allen is fascinating from a bunch of different outlets. You watch the games, you read the stories, and you see what Lamar Jackson's doing for Baltimore. He's 3-0, doing most of his work rushing, you know, looks very shaky passing the ball. You know, again, all the concerns that we had about him, and we were fans, you know, the accuracy to the outside, the accuracy down the field, accuracy in general, we're seeing that materialize. Right now, the passing component of his game is very suspect. I'm not ready to write it off and saying he can't do it, but the narrative on Lamar Jackson seems to be, yeah, it's okay. He's not doing it. Like, you know, they really haven't opened up the offense yet. You know, he's 3-0. They're rushing. The passing will kind of come along in time. And then you see the narrative on Josh Allen, and I've been blown away with what I've seen with Josh Allen. He's rushing just as much, if not more, than Lamar Jackson. He's doing Cam Newton-like things as a rusher, but he's actually had some success as a passer. Has he been consistent with his accuracy? No, but Josh Allen's never going to be that consistent with his accuracy. He might hover as a guy who eventually his ceiling could be in that 58 to 60% window, you know, down the line. Right now, it's probably even less than that. And that's all that people seem to really harp on when they talk about Josh Allen right now. And I think it's just people don't want to give up their takes from before the season started, when people thought he was absolute trash, that he should be a fourth round pick. You know, very few people have came to the forefront in, yeah, maybe we undersold Josh Allen a little bit. Maybe what he's already doing at the NFL level with absolutely nothing around him, a poor offensive line, an aging running back, and no wide receivers that possess NFL consistent caliber skill. And this guy is making plays. He's buying time in the pocket. He's throwing on the run. He's throwing. He's making throws that few people on this planet can do and few have ever done at the NFL level. When we talked about his arm talent on a Marino and Elway-like level, it wasn't hyperbole. It was truth. But the narrative on Josh Allen isn't, wow, he's really done good and he's going to continue to grow and develop. The narrative is still, he's really been poor in terms of his accuracy and stuff like that. But that's not the narrative on Lamar Jackson. And I get frustrated with that because I like both of these guys. And I still don't think people are giving Josh Allen his fair due. And Lamar Jackson was a guy most people liked and endorsed going into the draft and during the draft season. And for him, they kind of look past the accuracy issues and the inconsistency as a passer so far this year and just kind of say, okay, he's going to fix that. He's going to grow and develop. Well, why is that not spoken about Josh Allen, who's already looked better as a passer than anybody thought he was, and he's combined it with his athleticism, his maneuverability, his ability to buy time in the pocket? He looks like a young Cam Newton. He truly does, playing without any weapons. You put weapons around him, his accuracy percentage is going to come up. You put a better team around him. That stuff, again, maybe he ends up being a 57 to 59 or 57 to 60. I think the Bills are happy with the guy they have there. Besides that, Sam Darnold's coming back this week. Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield struggled. Listen, it was a blip on the radar. Baker Mayfield's been great all year. Josh Rosen is a guy who they need to build up around him. He lost Christian Kirk for the year as well. You know, so, you know, again, we're going to have to hold judgment on guys like Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen. I am not ready to make any big proclamations about any of those guys. Matt, I know I went off a little bit on a tangent there about Josh Allen, but it's just something I kind of feel strong about that I get frustrated when people still don't want to seem to give him the credit that he deserves in terms of him being a pretty intriguing talent. And listen, maybe he flames out, you know, in year two, but maybe he continues to grow and he becomes a really good quarterback. I think that's just as much, if not more, on the table as him flaming out.
No, I'm not going to deviate too much from what you said. I think that that's a really good point. In fact, we were talking about that very same fact today when I was saying to you the same things. We were saying, it's just, man, it's strange that everybody is on Josh Allen for what he lacks his ability to do now or what he's not accomplishing. Yet Lamar Jackson is doing relatively the same level of play, if not worse at times or better at times, but relatively the same level of play, and people have not even batted an eye. It just strikes me as completely, and I would argue that Baltimore, yeah, it doesn't have a lot in the passing game, but at least they got an all-star defense that can at least keep them in games. You know, Josh Allen is constantly playing from behind, always having to look over his shoulder and go out there and make things happen. If you don't think that psychology plays a point in their overall game or the way they play, I think that's ridiculous. I think there's always that psychological component that affects skill on the field. I know where it sounds like I'm getting on a theme of psychology. I'm not. I'm just reminding everybody that when you talk about skill, you're talking about how everything about that environment creates and manifests itself in the player's play style. It goes right down to just like the down and distance in the play call. It matters what the player's thinking about before that actual play was called. Maybe they were terrible. Maybe he got sacked. How does he respond? But also looking at the scoreboard and wondering, I know I don't have a defense here. I know I'm not going to be able to do this if I don't get a score right now. These things are going on in their minds. I got to make a play. I can't go for that first read. I can't go for that. I mean, I know it's open. I got to go for that intermediate read. I got to stuff it in there. Look, it's cover two. I got my pre-snap read. I'm going to skip off my first read and I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go for it. Look at the score. We have 4 minutes left. I have no chance. These things are happening. consciously or subconsciously. And if you don't think that matters, then I think you're a fool.
It's night and day what they're putting on each of those two quarterbacks' plates. You watch the Baltimore games. It is very minimized what they asking Lamar Jackson to do right now. They're running. I think they've rushed over 35 attempts each of his three games. That's almost unheard of in today's NFL. Two of the teams they played, I mean, were like the Raiders and I forget who was their first game, but I mean, it was two of the lower feeding teams in the NFL that, Baltimore was going to win those games probably no matter what. And, they were very safe game plans, one read throws and progressions for Lamar Jackson, if not take off. And you've noticed in the first cup, sometimes in the early half of these games, that they kind of come out and want to try to be more of a traditional offense, and then it doesn't really work. And then they kind of let him do his thing as the game wears on. But then you watch Josh Allen, and they're asking him to make difficult throws. He's making throws on the run. He's going through progressions. He's taking shots vertically down the field. It's very different in terms of the responsibility of what they're putting on these two guys. And to me, one is shown a lot more all around than the other one early on, even though I like both their games. I think both they're going to be successful.
Yep.
Take the win, loss, and all that stuff out of it. I just don't know why more. It just seems Lamar is getting a pass for anything he's not showing right now. And Josh Allen is still being ragged on for anything that's not perfect. Like, anybody expected him to be perfect coming out of Wyoming when he had plenty of concerns about his game, but also plenty of positives. And he's doing every one of those positives at the highest level. So yeah, you could, in college, he was doing them at Wyoming. He's now doing them at the highest level of football.
Yeah, say what you want. He's the same player at the highest level.
Yeah, and he's doing well. So those characteristics, those strengths of his game have translated. Now it's about bringing up the flaws and the weaknesses in his game to an average level. And if he does that, he's a franchise quarterback. So I'm not going to sit here and proclaim him anything after, six games or whatever he's played this year. But he's already shown that he can play at the level, and now it's about developing and continuing to progress and hone in the other concerns and the other aspects of his game that he needs to work on. And I think he's going to do it.
So, Paul, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Out of the quarterbacks you just mentioned, Lamar, Josh Allen, Darnold, and Rosen, okay, which one in order, how would you go after them? If you knew that there are owners that are just kind of languishing around, you have a need for a quarterback, how would you go after them?
We're talking fantasy football?
Yeah, we got to talk fantasy. I'm not really going to talk reality.
All right, if we're talking fantasy football,
because they're not getting traded. Nobody's trading those guys.
If we're talking fantasy football, I've started to swing towards, I think I'd rather Josh Allen. With the running component that Josh Allen is showing, even more than I thought he had, I think he's got the arm that he's going to make throws that few can. Even if he's inconsistent, even if his accuracy is 55%, even if he throws some interceptions here or there, if you combine his rushing ability with the upside of his passing game that he has, if Buffalo goes out and gets him some wide receivers, and I think they will over the next year or two, I think his upside is the highest. I'd probably put Lamar Jackson too, because again, that rushing ability is a cheat code in fantasy. And then I'd probably put Sam Darnold, and then Josh Rosen probably would be fifth. I mean, right now I think Baker Mayfield, I really like Baker Mayfield's game. I still envision Drew Brees-like player.
I would take Mayfield over all those guys.
Yeah, I would. I would take Mayfield over them, but you didn't kind of bring him up in the convo, so I left him off to the side. Mayfield would still be my number one in terms of that, because I still think Mayfield is on the trajectory of being a week in and week out QB1, top six, top eight, put it in the books. And I have less concerns about his game. I still think there's growth and development from the other four guys that I need to see, from them. So it's an intriguing question. It's a question that you could ask me on a regular basis, and it might be tweaked and change a little bit, but it's a fun question nonetheless. And the fact that Josh Allen has emerged is a credit to what he's been able to do with nothing around him this year. So let's go rapid fire for the rest of this. So, we kind of wrap it up here. In the pass catchers, absolutely nothing to discuss in the tight ends. Nothing's changed. If you like those guys from last year, still go out and buy them now. Get them on the cheap before the season ends. For the wide receivers, I already mentioned Christian Kirk down with an injury for the rest of the year. Three names I wanted to mention. Okay, I'm not going to get into every guy again this week. because we went a little long here on the quarterbacks, and we've talked about the main guys a lot. I've been talking about them. One, Dante Pettis. He's starting to emerge, looked really impressive. You watch his film. I walk away. Listen, he wasn't at the top of my wide receiver board last year, and I'm not saying that's where he is now for me, but you walk away and you do come away impressed with him. His ability to play, you know, inside in the slot, on the outside, get off, you know, get off man coverage. I think he's a good route runner and he's very dangerous in the open field. We saw that this week, making a couple plays, taking into the house for the 49ers. Impressive nonetheless. I'm excited about him. He's going to be a guy who I kind of hope he struggles down the stretch here, to be honest with you, selfishly, because if he finishes out the year red hot, he's going to be hard to get a hold of next year with Jimmy Garoppolo coming back. But Dante Pettis is a guy I'd be looking to buy in the offseason. Antonio Callaway, he's another guy that certain platforms want to rag on him and basically think he's not even worthy of being in the NFL. Listen, I was a fan of Antonio Callaway. Matt was a fan of Antonio Callaway. Has he had some issues this year? For sure. Has he had some drops? For sure. Has he had some bad focus stuff with drops and stuff? For sure.
Has he not played in almost 2 years prior to this? For sure.
Yeah, and watch him closely. If you have Game Pass or Rewind, whatever it's called now, I feel like they've changed the name
something like that
over the years. Go watch Antonio Callaway's routes. Watch the separation that he gets pretty consistently every single week. Take out the drops, take out the fumble as he was going to, you know, this week he scored a touchdown, was called back on a penalty. He was about to score another touchdown and fumbled right near the end zone. Take all that other stuff out of it for now. Take the fact that Baker Mayfield continues looking for him, and take the fact that he's constantly creating separation at all levels of the field, and put some of the other stuff to the side for right now and understand, yeah, he's not been great this year in terms of fantasy. He's had a couple moments here or there, but he's a young player. Matt just said he hasn't played in a long time. And let's give him an opportunity to continue to develop. Maybe, you know, those drops continue and they continue to plague him. And if they do, then he's not going to be relevant for the Browns or for fantasy. But he is a first-year player. He hasn't played football in quite some time. Let's also look, if we're going to bring up the flaws constantly, and that's fine if you want to do that. I understand.
There's nothing wrong with that. These guys aren't infallible.
But let's also, just like the Josh Allen conversation, if you're going to bring up the flaws, that's fine. But then bring up the pros. Bring up what he is doing. And unless you're just box score scouting, unless you're just reading what you hear from some of the major outlets out there, you're missing out on the fact that he is getting open on a regular basis. And it takes you watching film on you're not watching a lot of Browns games. And, you know, I have watched some stuff on him. I'm not saying I've seen every route. Not even close. But I've done enough and I've watched enough to see the fact that he's getting open pretty consistently at the NFL level. And it's not like the Browns have these great other outside perimeter wide receivers, you know, that are drawing so much attention that he's feasting off of inferior competition. They have a quality slot wide receiver in Jarvis Landry, who's been inconsistent over the last, you know, month and a half. You know, so Antonio Callaway, I'd still be buying, and he's going to cost you cheaper than what you bought for him last year, probably, and I'd get him on my roster. And then the last guy, I know Matt's a fan of him, is Michael Gallup for the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
Starting to see him emerge a little bit in the complementary role that Matt has been screaming from the hilltop was what suited Michael Gallup. And once Cooper got there and the Dallas offense started to find their role and find their, you know, rhythm, And Cooper was that lead guy, we've seen Michael Gallup emerge, and we've seen him be more consistent a little bit week in and week out, and I think we're going to see that down the stretch. Dallas has some good matchups down the stretch, and even if they don't, Gallup's a guy who you might be able to get on the cheap and might be a pretty solid wide receiver 4, flex type player, some wide receiver 3 weeks, And he might be a guy that people are kind of a little down on. They traded for Amari Cooper. I drafted Michael Gallup thinking he was going to be the guy, even though if you listen to us, we told you he was never going to be that guy. You know, that's not his skill set. And who's going to be that? So those are a couple guys, Pettis, Callaway, Gallup, that I wanted to mention. Haven't talked a lot about any of those guys over the year in spots I have, but I was intrigued by those guys. Matt, any quick thoughts on that, or I'll take it to the running back position?
No, I'll give you two more names to keep on the back of your tilt a little bit. Two more names to keep on the back. Richie James. Richie James does nothing but catch the football when he gets the opportunity to. The 49ers, to me, are still this amalgam of an offense that we're not really sure what it's going to look like when everybody's healthy and put together. I would stash Richie James at the end of my bench. Trey Quinn, I'd stash him too. I'd stash those guys. They're good stashes because Quinn, when he's there and he's healthy, it's clear that he's going to be the first relevant Mr. Irrelevant. And when he's healthy, I think he's going to have a role. I would stash Richie James. I would stash Trey Quinn.
Yeah, listen, Jameson Crowder is a free agent. Trey Quinn could be the slot wide receiver next year. You know, intriguing guy. Richie James.
Ooh, Justin Watson, too. Don't forget about Justin Watson.
Yeah, Deshaun Jackson's probably not going to be with the Bucs next year. You know, so no, listen, you know, Adam Humphries has really came on strong this year. So, you know,
We've seen that though from Adam Humphries. Like we've seen Adam Humphries have those years, you know, where it's like he produces. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, we've seen those years from Adam Humphries. He's a guy, though, I think that Justin Watson offers maybe a little bit more. But like you said, who knows for sure? And Javon Wims.
Javon Wims. Dylan Cantrell just was activated off the practice squad for the Chargers. He's got some intriguing skill set, tested really well at the
combine. Chris Warren is still.
Yeah. And at the running back position, not going to go through all the big guys. I've talked about them at length. We'll talk about them more, you know, in the weeks pending here. But a couple names I wanted to mention. One, Jalen Samuels is going to get an opportunity this week. James Conner is injured. You're going to see Jalen Samuels get an opportunity. Listen, I think he's a little bit of a jack of all trade type guy. I don't think he's a guy who can be, you know, an every down type running back. You know, I think he's a guy you got to get spots to here or there, but he's going to get his opportunity this week. A little bit intriguing to watch him. Chase Edmonds had a really productive game this past week, you know, scored 2 touchdowns. He only had like 7 or 8 looks, but he's an intriguing guy to try to get on the cheap during the offseason. I think he's a guy that, you know, listen, David Johnson's going to be the guy, but Chase Edmonds, if you have David Johnson, I would definitely try to go get Chase Edmonds. But Chase Edmonds is a guy, if you kind of wait it out a little bit, he could be a guy down the line that has some intriguing PPR value as a running back, brief flex type guy, like his overall skill set. And then Justin Jackson is a guy that Matt and I were fans of. I remember Matt Waldman, I believe it was him, was a fan of. We talked a lot about him. I thought he was going to be like a 4th or 5th round pick, you know, in last year's NFL draft. He was one of the biggest surprises of the combine. Not that he tested out well in the change of direction drills, but in terms of his explosiveness in the broad jump, the vertical jump, say what you want about those, but to have his collegiate career at Northwestern in the passing game and the running game, then to blow up the combine, It was mind-boggling that he fell to, what was it? I'm
it was like the 6th or 7th round.
Either it was the 7th round or it was undrafted. Like in terms of remembering where guys were drafted. But I remember I was so caught off guard by him not getting taken, you know, like in round 4 or round 5 that he fell to the end of the draft or out of the draft. And, you know, I think they released him in training camp. Then they were able to get him back on the practice squad, you know, and then he was kind of been there for a while. And then now he's got an opportunity. You watch that game, on Sunday night, there's no comparison between him and Austin Ekeler as runners. I mean, he is clearly the better runner, more explosive. I mean, I remember saying last year.
He was round 7, 251st pick.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, round 7, right at the end of the draft, close to where Trey Quinn was taken, only a couple of picks before that. And I remember talking in all the post-draft shows we did. Now, listen, Melvin Gordon has been phenomenal. He's emerged into one of the best running backs in football. But I don't remember who was on the air, and we were talking about Jackson as a guy who's intriguing because we said, listen, the Chargers might have, you know, a lot of young guys on their roster are due for big money extension soon. What if they don't pay Melvin Gordon? And we were like, Jackson's really intriguing. Like, he's a guy who I don't deserve to go much higher. The skill set we saw in terms of the receiving, the, you know, rushing ability, I think that was real at college. I think he's a guy who I'm intrigued by. And if Gordon comes back this week or next week, don't be scared to go get Jackson in the offseason.
Oh, yeah. Because,
you know, he's a guy who you get him on your roster, whether you're a Melvin Gordon owner or not. And you just kind of wait it out a little bit in these deep dynasty leagues. I mean, maybe, you know, listen, Austin Eckler, different type of player, like I said, but you know, Jackson is a guy who intrigues me. So a couple of the low guys there who we haven't talked a lot about, Edmonds, Samuels, Jackson, all intriguing. I mean, it just adds to the depth of how great this rookie class has been. I mean, look at the wide receivers we just talked about. Look at the running backs. None of those guys are like in the top 5 or 10, you know, in terms of, you know, what's gone on this year. You know, like, you know, those guys are squarely after the elite guys who in terms of produced this year. So it just shows you the depth of this whole class in totality. Matt, anything back position or want to call it a night?
No, I mean, I'm pretty much ready to go, but I wanted to curse Paul out officially by telling him that he tells you to wait on these guys, and I didn't even follow my own advice because we talk about that all the time. Trust your tape, trust the tape, trust the tape. I drafted Chase Edmonds and Justin Jackson, and due to roster needs on my own roster, I dropped Justin Jackson, and the man across the other side of the mic picked him up promptly in our league. And now he holds his actual right. And that's why, though, I think what his point is, and I want to illustrate, is he's right. You don't know how rosters are going to shape up, especially at the running back position where volatility has always proven to be true. Unless you're Saquon Barkley, you know these guys necessarily aren't always entrenched. And even Saquon, who knows? So at the running back position in particular, roster turnover creates opportunity. And I felt like these guys right out of the gate were going to be the number two guys. Chase Edmonds turned out to be the number two guy. I got spooked by Austin Eckler. I did. I didn't know what was happening there, and I got a little spooked, but I thought Justin Jackson was the goods, and I had to make a roster move, and I dropped him, and now Mr. Perkeasy has him. But it goes to show you, those guys ended up being those guys. So I think as you guys go into the offseason and go into this last couple of weeks, and as people are filling out the rosters and winning championships, if you're on the fringe or you're on the cutting edge, if you have guys that you know are not going to be on your team next year, go and grab guys that you can hold the rights to, whose fortunes may dramatically change in the offseason. Trey Quinn, Justin Watsons, Justin Jackson, Chase Edmonds. Who knows how it goes? It could be an injury away or a roster move away from those guys stepping into the limelight and you looking like a genius. Go and grab those guys and fill up the back end of your roster with potential and upside.
Yeah, and I'll final note, and this will be my parting shot, is don't give up on your evals on guys either, because it's so easy to get down on guys who maybe didn't live up to expectations in year one, and then you move them, you undervalue them, you trade them on the cheap, you know, and then you know, and then down the line, what you thought about these guys and what you thought they can be materializes, but you got rid of too early, you know, for a in the moment need, and sometimes you have to do that. I get it, and sometimes roster crunch, unless you're in super deep leagues, you know, force the hand, you know, force Matt to, you know, cut a guy like Jackson and me just being lucky enough to have the waiver claim to bring him in. I know I gave up too early. I love Kenyon Drake coming out of college. Matt was right there with me. We thought he could be an electric player at the NFL level. He didn't do anything his rookie year. I was kind of down on him. I ended up selling him for really cheap. And then look at the player he's became. Now you could say whatever you want about him this year, but when Kenyon Drake gets touches, he's explosive and he makes plays happen. And I didn't stay true to my assessment on him when I watched him coming out. And I was too worried about in the now how poor his rookie year went, and ended up selling him way too low instead of holding on and letting some more time pass before maybe, you know, giving up on a player of his skill set. And I think it's easy to do it. Don't do that. Fill your roster with these high upside guys and kind of hold them as long as you can until the need is to get rid of them.
Paul, so this was just to put a fine point on that. Has Tyler Boyd taught us the lesson that we need to remember? Has Tyler Boyd taught us the lesson this year that we need to remember? Because if he hasn't, then you've been under a rock.
Yeah.
I mean, both Paul and I were like,
hi.
We loved him. We loved him. And we even admitted in our own leagues that we've moved him. And I moved it a year too early or a moment too early, all because of some fake timetable that I put in my mind. If you got a guy who's getting touches his rookie year or getting experience his rookie year, that should be everything you need to know to hold on to him for another year. See how it works out. See how it plays out. See how that time span and playing time grows.
Yeah, and we're seeing it right now with Curtis Samuel. He was probably taken in late round 2 to early round 3 of rookie drafts. the year before this, and he did nothing his rookie year, and it was easy to give up on him, and then he did nothing to start this year, and they drafted DJ Moore, and it was easy to say, okay, that's a waste of a pick, and now look at Curtis Samuel emerging, and I think, you know, next year, I think, you know, him and DJ Moore are going to be the focal points of that pass offense. I truly believe that, and Funches is going to kind of be weaned out a little bit if he's even still there, to be honest with you. So, you know, it's intriguing. It's fun to talk about these guys. Don't give up as quickly as we often do in the moment in fantasy football, because you miss out on some great things down the line. So there it is, the NFL Rookie Report for Week 13. So much fun stuff to talk about. You know, next week, you know, we'll start previewing the first round of bowl games. We'll obviously talk about, you know, the NFL rookies again in next week's NFL Rookie Report, you know, and then obviously, you know, set the stage. It'll be a little bit of a different episode because it'll really just be more of the tail of the tape as we preview the first set of bowl games. Obviously, we'll talk about some declarations. We'll talk a little bit about maybe who we think's going to win the Heisman. I don't, you know, maybe there's some debate about that now after Tua's performance this past weekend and on top of Kyler Murray's and Dwayne Haskins. Maybe it's a little bit more up for debate. We'll talk about that next week. We'll make our Heisman predictions, you know, and then obviously we'll close it out with the NFL Rookie Report next week as well. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.